I am Digital Dave.
And I'm Fast Eddie.
And we verified that this morning.
Yep, we did. We looked at the data plate.
I checked my driver's license just to make sure.
I looked at my underwear and I thought myself, my name is BVD.
TMI.
Well, it could have been worse.
Okay, on to better subjects.
Didn't take much, did it?
Yep. Joining us is Jeff Dufford. Is that correct?
Duford.
Yep.
Okay. Close enough, though. Midwestern pronunciation.
Well, I'm actually from Pennsylvania.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. So
we're coal crackers, as we say. The history, Air Force Research Lab. Now, I always thought that that started out as NACA and then became NASA. No?
No. So actually, we have a wonderful and rich history that goes back to 1917, actually over 100 years.
Wow.
So the... this is the organization before the Air Force became a separate service in 1947. But in 1917, the U.S. entered the war, World War One. The Air Arm had no research facilities. It's unbelievable. And the country that invented powered controlled flight 14 years later does not have a military research facility. So they built a facility at a place called McCook Field in downtown Dayton, and that's really our beginning. So just over 100 years ago in 1917. And ever since then, the Air Force's research labs have created the foundational technology that have made us successful in World War II, Korea, Vietnam, winning the Cold War, and all the way today and now to the future.
So you're more focused on the hardware, not like the tactics and procedures?
It is. So it's a pretty big mission because it's all of the technology that we use. So it's not just things like propulsion, aerodynamics, weapons. It's things like information, AI, quantum computing. It's literally everything.
Okay.
And air, space, and cyberspace.
How many cup holders to put in the F-16?
Well, that's an important technology to develop, too.
I'm sorry, that's classified.
Keeping it hot, too.
I was going to say.
Keeping the coffee hot.
Yes, exactly.
How do you develop a fully aerobatic cup holder?
There you go. Carefully.
Well, I can't talk about that or else you wouldn't be allowed to leave this room
alive.
That's
right.
So.
Well, it sounds like you people have been involved in a lot of things. I imagine.
In everything.
And early on, most of the research done, was it on aerodynamics? Because airplanes were so new that, who knew how they flew and how to make them better?
What's remarkable as a historian is that what I see every day is we're trying to solve the same problems you've always tried to solve. One example of countless examples, propulsion. How do we make this air vehicle go faster? Well, in the teens, over 100 years ago, the way to do that is use a reciprocating engine, and then you make better propellers because the propeller translates the power of the engine into thrust for the vehicle. If it's an inefficient propeller, say a fixed propeller versus a controllable pitch propeller, you're not getting all the power out of that engine. So that was propulsion over 100 years ago. Now, today, it's advanced adaptive turbofan engines, gas turbines. It could be scramjets. But it's the same problem. How do we propel this vehicle faster? So we're still trying to solve some of the same problems we were trying to solve over 100 years ago, but now we have other domains. Now we have cyberspace. Space became part of the mix after World War II. So in World War I, a lot of the things they were focusing on were propulsion, propellers, materials, great example. So they went into great depth researching different types of woods because that was the material that was used. Stronger, more flexible wood, lighter wood, different types of laminates. Well, we have a whole directorate today called the Materials and Manufacturing, and we still have the materials issue. Well, now it's in terms of airframes, we look more at composites and things like that. But again, same issues.
Same problem.
It's just different. It's more advanced technology as we go along.
That's incredible. A lot of money spent on that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And well spent, I would argue, too,
yeah.
With the leaps ahead that we have. And another thing, too, it's for me, again, as a lab historian in AFRL, I see this fleet of airplanes out here, including some of the civilian ones. The lab's hand is all over these aircraft. Retractable landing gear, types of materials, variable pitch propellers, even things like using GPS to navigate. Not only are those Air Force satellites, the labs had a lot to do with developing the technology that enabled the creation of the GPS system.
Wow.
So
wait a minute.
Okay.
That means that you guys are responsible for when my GPS takes me to the wrong place.
Well, that could be our adversaries because we work on advanced navigation systems that would either enhance GPS or, in some cases, be completely independent of GPS because we are so dependent upon that, both in the civilian world and on the military side.
Do you guys ever get involved with working on, like, battlefield analysis and information gathering and analyzing?
We do, and that's an excellent point. So here's an example. So Korean War breaks out, and we've got all these recon aircraft, and back then the sensor was just chemical photography, right? So they had no problem with taking enough photos. The problem was analyzing it. They had these thousands and thousands of photographs, and how do they pile through this data? Because it's an individual looking through a magnifying glass. Well, they were overwhelmed. So fast forward to today, that's been a huge thing, and that's with our information director in Rome, New York, to be able to just pile through all this data, and that's where AI has a huge part.
I was wondering when that was going to enter the picture.
It's huge. I mean, just huge. And what it does, and then the ability to link these sensors together with sensor nets and to be able to plow through this information, and it's all about being able to make decisions faster. You know, if we can make decisions faster than an adversary, we've got to step on them. You know, imagine being in a fist fight with somebody and you can throw the punch first, or you can throw five times as many punches at somebody because they can't react faster. So absolutely, that's a huge part. AI, we've had automation in some of our military systems, actually going back to the first autopilots, which actually were invented just before we entered the war in World War I. We look at the autopilot system slave to the bomb site in B-17s in World War II. That's a form of automation. But during the Cold War, we had an automated air defense system called SAGE, and we see the first real-time computing. So we partnered with MIT, the Lincoln Lab, the very famous Lincoln Lab, that was formed to create SAGE. And then they kept the Lincoln Lab, and we still partner with universities. So that was an automated air defense system. So now, today, and going into the future, being able to comprehend and pull information out of this vast pile of data is essential for us to be successful.
You're talking big picture here. One of the things that I've been reading up on is battlefield conditions. Things are so fluid on the battlefield, and the difficulty being to get the information to the people who are running the battlefield so that they can make the decisions at the right time. How involved are you with that kind of technology?
We're intimately involved in it, and actually we work with partners in the Army, the Navy, DOD, international partners. We are trying to wrestle with how do we not only understand and comprehend what's happening in the air, on the ground, on the sea, under the sea, and in space, and in cyberspace, because all of these things are happening at once. So we're wrestling, along with DOD partners, to try to not only be able to see what's happening, but to be able to control those forces. Here's an example. We have an adversary surface-to-air missile site. 50, 60 years ago, we'd fire an anti-radiation missile at it and destroy it with kinetics, right? Today, I can introduce, say, for instance, in the cyberspace, introduce a virus that takes down the computers that runs that surface-to-air missile site. So I can use one domain, cyberspace, to have an effect in another domain on land. So now make all those lines between all the different domains. It's infinitely complex. So we have really smart folks, way smarter than me, who are wrestling with this. How do we understand what's happening in all these domains, and then how do we control it?
I imagine you guys are watching Ukraine very intensely because they're coming up with tactics and strategies that are just nobody's even thought about this stuff, what they're doing with low-cost drones. And now that's a whole other domain, if you want to call it that, of warfare you got to look at.
Yeah, there's some big lessons there. And we saw the effect of the small drones actually in the Armenia-Azerbaijan war, which happened before that. Here's an example. We have a directed energy directorate. They work with high-energy lasers and high-power microwaves. And one of our smart folks developed a system called Thor, and it emits a high-power microwave. These light drones could be coming in, and it fries their electronics, basically, and they drop right out of the sky. So that's an example of the importance of the labs. We can never sit still because it's a constantly shifting environment. And even when we're ahead in, say, some area, we have to continue to push that technology always.
So I imagine you're constantly looking for new hires and working with universities to develop the students and such?
Absolutely. And you know, we've gone to great lengths in the past several years to make it possible for entrepreneurs, startups, things like that, small companies to be able to interact. We do that through an organization called AFWERX, A-F-W-E-R-X, or we also have a front door website. If a person Googles AFRL, it's called, the URL is AF Research Lab, or AF Research, and a person who has a good idea is able to interact, and a human being will be on the other side to read about what their proposal is, and if it's a good proposal, maybe they get contacted.
That's fantastic.
Sounds great.
There is no monopoly on inspiration.
That we have to find the advancements in technology everywhere it's at. Industry, universities, international partners, everywhere.
Well, I've built this Lego weapon system.
It'll take out Lego stuff.
So I recommend going to the website and putting that proposal in and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm sure you get a few of those every time. All right, we've been talking with Jeff Duford of the Air Force Research Lab.
Right, the historian.
That's a cool job in any old organization.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, very much so. I'm incredibly blessed I get to do what I do.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful history.
You get to dig through all the old desk drawers that nobody's looked in for 40 years.
Yep.
So, all right. This is Digital Dave losing his mind.
And I'm Fast Eddie, and this is EAA Radio.